Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. If you've never seen a sex chair, here's how it's described online. A luxury chaise with elegant curves and serious style. There is no end to the possibilities. Supremely comfortable. Blends into your bedroom. And what might cause you to actually buy one? Well, Lori Jaquila did, and she writes about it in her essay, The Plain Unmarked Box Arrived. It's read by Kristen Bell, who stars in The Good Place, which is now in its third season on NBC.
The night we ordered the sex chair, we'd been drinking. Not a lot, but enough to make a sex chair seem like an investment, like junk bonds or an IRA. The kids were asleep. Dave and I were at the kitchen table, recovering from our son Lachlan's 7th birthday. We'd thought we had kept it simple this year. Bowling party, pizza, cake. "We'll go easy," I said. "Low stress." Last year, we had a party at home. We hired two clowns, a husband and wife team who ran ads in the Penny Saver. They were a bargain. $200 cash for 2 hours, including a magic show, a live animal show, face painting, and balloons. I felt lucky to find them. But minutes after they arrived, in a rusted-out Chevy van smelling like smoke and stale beer, we gleaned the truth. The clowns didn't seem to be happily married. The reason they were late, according to Mrs. Clown, was that Mr. Clown couldn't follow directions to save his checkered backside. They argued in our driveway. At one point, she kicked him with her huge clown feet. He waved a lit cigarette close to her rubber nose and face paint. Later, they let a goose and a terrier loose in our basement, made the birthday boy wear a toilet seat as a lay, fashioned a pair of balloon boobs, and set off firecrackers on our new rug. "I don't care what we do this year," Dave said when the subject of Lachlan's birthday came up. "Just no more clowns." So, Loke Lanes it was, the local bowling alley where, 10 years ago, the Farrelly brothers filmed the movie Kingpin. Our party was Dave and I and 19 sugar-rushed first graders. We tried to keep them from knocking each other unconscious with bowling balls, while our 3-year-old daughter, Phelan, stuffed cake into the automated ball returns. After 20 minutes, the kids realized that all the toys in their party bags, glow sticks, lollipop rings, gummy wristbands, could be used as weapons. You think I would have learned. Years ago, in a similar lapse of judgment, I dated a special forces guy. He used to hold up things that were equally innocuous, like dental floss and empty toilet paper rolls, and say, "You know, I could kill you with this if I wanted to." It didn't help that Lachlan's party had an army theme. The cake was shaped like a soldier in full combat gear. The boys fought over who got to eat the head. "I call brains," one buzz-cut kid who did gang signs during the group picture kept screaming. "I call brains!" "I feel like they're winning," Dave said when Brains' boy stabbed him in the backside with a pink glow stick. "They are," I said, plucking icing out of my hair. Back home, we were finally alone. We had beer in frosted mugs. We had Townes Van Zandt on the stereo, a frozen pizza in the oven, and a new copy of Rolling Stone. We sat across from one another, raised our glasses, and smiled. Dave was wearing Phelan's lime green monster hat, a fuzzy number with bug eyes and devil horns. It looked like a possessed condom. Which reminds me, the sex chair. I'm getting to that. But first, background. This is how we spend most Saturday nights. We wear funny hats, play music that doesn't call for hand claps or puppets, drink cold beer, and steal time while fans whir in the kids' room to block out our noise. Not that we make much. We keep our voices down, the music turned low. Lachlan would be furious if he knew we were awake and having fun without him. Before he goes to bed every night, there are questions. So, he says, his eyes like coin slots, staying upstairs all night? A few years back, we finished the basement and built two offices, one for Dave, one for me. One night, Lachlan woke up scared and came to find us. We were downstairs, each in our own little office. Lachlan was incensed. Downstairs was too far away for us to save him from things like vampires and boredom. Also, he couldn't hear what we were up to. Absolutely, we'll be upstairs, I said. Oh yeah? He said. What are you going to do? Nothing much. Take a bath. Go to bed. The usual. You need sleep, he said. I love you, I said, backing out. Love you too, he yelled, pulling the covers over his head. He pretends to snore, but I know he never goes down that easy. Lately, it had gotten worse. The slightest noise would set Lachlan off. He would come stumbling blind down the hall, half naked, angry. If Dave and I wanted to have sex, we had to wait until morning when Lachlan was off at school. Phelan slept late, and so we had an hour there before work. If we wanted to have sex at night, we had to sneak, latch the bedroom door, keep the bed squeaks to a minimum, and listen for footsteps, a jiggled doorknob, the sound of small, covert breathing. Which is why the sex chair was doomed. It started as a joke. Dave found the ad in Rolling Stone. There was a website. After a few beers, we were in the online world of Liberator. We were flirty, having fun, putting the day and all its small humiliations behind us. We joked about the shapes of vibrators, the seriousness of the dominatrix models, the practicality of glass dildos and 6-inch stiletto boots. Then we wandered over to the furniture section. New waves to groove, the front page read. Put some funk into function. The furniture looked like it came from Barbie's country camper, overstuffed swooshes in everything from earth tones to zebra prints. When not in use for its primary purpose, each piece converted to a chaise that promised to cradle all the right places and recharge sexual energy. Dave and I had been married for over 7 years. We still had sexual energy, but it was that word, recharge, that was so appealing. Plus, the furniture looked really comfortable. And it was on sale. For just under $400, we could recharge, revitalize, reclaim. What do you think? I said. It's a steal, he said. I dug out the credit card we usually reserved for groceries and car repairs. Dave typed in the numbers. 6 days later, the chair arrived. It was huge. The box was plain, unmarked. We had trouble getting it through the front door. All the pictures of the Liberator furniture had shown two beautiful people sprawled in a wide open space, a loft, probably, a bachelor pad straight out of Esquire, mod art on the walls, wood floors covered with animal skins. There was no other furniture in the shot. Where are we going to put it? I asked after we finally got the chair unpacked. We'd ordered it in navy blue. It matched the living room and our bedroom. The chair wouldn't fit in either. "Downstairs?" he said. The basement, the side away from our offices, was a wide open space. There was a fireplace. We'd painted the main room a creamy beige, the same color you see in coffee shops. The color was soothing, sensual, and most of all, the space was private, a whole floor down from the kids. Though, of course, we would have to be careful. We would have to plan. This made it exciting. "Wear thigh highs," Dave whispered while I scraped dried egg off the dishes. I made a note to dig my lingerie out of my sock drawer. "If you go to 7-Eleven," I whispered as he played Mr. Potato Head with Phelan, "don't forget batteries." But then Lachlan came home from school and went, oddly, straight downstairs. He usually stayed in the living room or went to his bedroom to play with his army guys, but not this time. Who knows why? It took him a minute. "Hey, Mom," he yelled. "Thanks for the cool chair." I was horrified. The chair had lived up to the ads. It looked almost normal. Funky, oddly shaped, but it did blend in, if you didn't know what it was. When I went downstairs, Lachlan was straddling the chair. A platoon of little plastic army guys was lined up along the curves, like an invading force on a ridge. He was holding one of the bigger army guys and making gunshot noises and yelling, let's go, and look out, and "Arr!" "He thinks it's his," I told Dave. "It's creepy." "Don't think about it," he said, "and don't talk about it either." That night, when we put the kids to bed, Phelan went right down, but Lachlan did his usual anxious drill. "Staying upstairs all night?" "Of course," I said, and tried not to blink. "Okay," he said, and that was it. "Good night." "I love you," I said, but he already had the covers over his head. What can I say about married love? Sometimes it all feels like a battle between parenthood and ourselves, between what we love and what we love. "Nice to see you," Dave says on Saturday nights. "Nice to see you," I say, as if we hadn't seen each other in years. Sometimes I wonder about Mr. and Mrs. Clown. It's not every day two clowns throw down in your driveway, their matching rainbow wigs bobbing, smiles huge and painted on. But maybe they were just having a bad day. Maybe they're mostly happy. Maybe when they take off their makeup and flashing suspenders, when they're just themselves, people with real names like Bob or Alice, they say, "Nice to see you," and fall in love all over again. As for Dave and me, I found the thigh highs. I lighted candles and the basement flickered like a movie set. Dave kissed me, and together we curled into the chair's soft, perfect curves. And then there were footsteps, back and forth over our heads, frantic. "Mom!" Lachlan called at the top of the stairs. "Dad!" What can I say? We left the chair in its place for a few weeks. Then, when Dave's parents came for a visit, we hid it under the stairs. "I don't think they'll know what it is," Dave said, "but just in case." At first, Lachlan missed the chair, but now I think he has forgotten, which is fine, because his father and I haven't. It's still there, under the stairs, waiting. It comes with an extended warranty. It's solidly built, real quality stuff. An investment made to last through almost anything.
That's Kristen Bell reading Lori Jaquila's essay, "The Plain Unmarked Box Arrived." We'll catch up with Lori after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Lori's essay was published more than 10 years ago, and her kids are teenagers now. So we asked her, what's happened to the chair in the past decade?
Well, it is in our basement. Originally, we put it under the staircase, hoping nobody would look for it. And then my son found it under there, and he dragged it out. And he uses it as a video game chair, and his friends often stay over, 17-year-old boys, in our basement. And one night recently, I came downstairs to find 17-year-old boys draped all over the basement, including one on the chair. So that's really pretty much ruined it forever. But yeah, it's still in our house. It's blue. It's very functional. It's very comfortable, and it blends in with everything else. So yeah. And also, where do you get rid of it? I can't even start to think about how you would do that.
Lori says her son has never read the Modern Love piece and does not know what the chair is really for.
But he may after this. But I'm hoping at this point he knows enough about his parents not to be shocked by anything. My daughter does know. She's more interested in what I do than he is, but she's also extraordinarily close with both my husband and me, and she gets it. She knows we're kind of weird.
As for whether they've used the chair for its intended purpose?
Can I no comment on that one?
Well, usually we would not accept no for an answer, but we did give Lori a pass on this one. She did say that finding balance between parenting and marriage has gotten a little easier as her kids have gotten older. But for a long time, it was a challenge. And she has a little advice for other people who are trying to figure it out.
You probably have these feelings that people think aren't exactly always appropriate because you're a person and you're not alone. And being a parent is hard and wonderful, and being a person in a relationship is hard and wonderful, and the world's a little less lonely if we're honest about all of that. And also, I would like people to know that if they ever see clowns advertising in the Penny Saver, that they should maybe think twice before hiring them.
That's Lori Jaquila. She's author of several books, including Belief is Its Own Kind of Truth, Maybe, and Portrait of the Artist as a Bingo Worker. She lives in Pennsylvania with her husband, who's also a writer, and their two kids. We've got more after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments. Ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe.
You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for The New York Times.
Well, I hear a lot from people in long-term marriages where there are efforts made to relight the fire, or as she says in this essay, to recharge. And what I find in these marriages is the effort to reconnect is more important than the actual physical reconnection, that the effort is coming from both sides, and they go to these sort of incredible and silly lengths to get back their youth and to get back that sense of excitement and to introduce something new into their lives. And what's most promising to me about a marriage like that is that they both want it, and they both want each other, and they want it to last.
Kristen Bell told us why she connected with this essay.
I have two small kids, so the idea of them disrupting intimacy with my husband is very familiar. But I love how the writer stresses that you still have to try and you can still be crazy, but you also have to be careful. And I think it's often comical how those two worlds collide.
Thanks again to Kristen for reading this week's piece. You can see her now in season 3 of The Good Place on NBC. Next week, John C. Reilly.
Every week I came to dread asking him the size of his head, but I couldn't let it go. After so many years of missed birthday parties and unattended Little League games, the struggle to determine the size of his head seemed like my one slim shot at redemption. Invariably, every conversation came down to the same simple question: how big is your head?
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, Caitlin O'Keefe, and John Parati. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. And by the way, if you love the show, you can help listeners find us by leaving Modern Love a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Or you can just tell a friend about it. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.